Welcome to the Intro Biology Podcast. Today we'll be discussing cellular membranes and selective permeability. So plasma membranes that surround cells are important for lots of different processes that bring material into and out of the cell. And some of the things we'll be talking about over the next few episodes are how this transportation works. We'll talk about passive transport of small molecules that does not require energy, that may or may not involve proteins. Active transport that does require energy to bring small molecules across the membranes and uses proteins, and then bulk transport where large numbers of molecules are brought in at the same time or released at the same time, called endocytosis or exocytosis. But to begin, let's discuss cellular membranes themselves. They are comprised of phospholipids that we've discussed in a previous episode, which are amphipathic molecules, that is, they have polar and nonpolar regions, or hydrophobic and hydrophilic regions within the same molecule. The heads of phospholipids are hydrophilic. They like and prefer to be in contact with water, while the tails, the fatty acid tails, are hydrophobic, and they prefer to be associated with other nonpolar hydrophobic molecules, such as the tails of other phospholipids. And this property means that plasma membranes or cell membranes arrange themselves usually into this lipid bilayer, where the heads are facing above and below and the tails are facing one another. So you have two rows with the heads facing in opposite directions and the tails facing one another. A model that's used to describe cellular membranes is called the fluid mosaic model, and this allows us to think of the membrane as a mosaic of protein molecules drifting laterally in a fluid bilayer of phospholipids. So you can think of them almost as rafts, and this is a term we'll actually use later in our discussion, where the proteins move about the surface in two dimensions as they move around the cell, and they're pushing or maneuvering between phospholipids in the membrane. Now just to discuss a few features of membranes, specifically their fluidity. Membranes are held together by hydrophobic interactions. It's the hydrophobic interactions between the tails that hold the membranes together, because nonpolar molecules coalesce to avoid having to contact water. But the fluidity of membranes actually changes as temperature changes. And interestingly, cells can actually respond to changes in temperature and change how their membranes are comprised. But first, just to discuss how temperature impacts fluidity. When temperature decreases, fluidity also decreases. This might make intuitive sense. The less temperature there is, the less heat there is, the less energy there is to move around, so things move more slowly and they tend to compact more when this happens. You have seen something like this if you've ever cooked bacon, for example, in a skillet. When the pan is hot, right, the bacon grease is a liquid, but when the pan cools down, that liquid coalesces into the fat that sticks to the bottom of the pan. This is partly why you don't pour those oils down the drain, because when they go into the drain and cool down, they'll solidify. The chemical composition of the fatty acids actually can influence how they behave at different temperatures. So if you consider unsaturated fatty acids, those are ones that contain a double bond, therefore they have a bend or a kink in them that prevents them from packing as tightly. Those fatty acids actually solidify at a lower temperature than would, say, a saturated fatty acid. So you have observed this if you've ever been in a kitchen and seen oils that are liquids at room temperatures and butters that are solids at room temperatures. Oils contain more unsaturated fatty acids, meaning that they can't pack in as tightly, so at room temperature, they're liquid. You would have to get those oils colder for them to solidify. Whereas butter, for example, is solid at room temperature because it contains more saturated fatty acids, meaning they can pack in more tightly, and it has a higher temperature at which it solidifies. Now returning to actual membranes and not just the fatty acids that comprise the phospholipids in them, cholesterol is a molecule that is also found in cellular membranes, and it acts like a fluidity buffer. At high temperatures, when you would normally be more fluid, cholesterol actually helps the membranes become less fluid. And at low temperatures, when the membranes normally would get less fluid, cholesterol helps them be more fluid. So you can think of it as kind of bringing it back from the extremes. If it's about to be too fluid at high temperature, it brings it back to make it a little bit more solid. And if it's too solid at a cold temperature, it brings it back to make it a little bit more fluid. as I alluded to earlier, cells themselves can actually change the composition of their membranes by synthesizing and moving more of either unsaturated fatty acid containing phospholipids or saturated fatty acid containing phospholipids to the membranes to change their fluidity. And you can think of them as having the same response as the effect of cholesterol. At colder temperatures, the problem is that membranes become too rigid, too solid. And to avoid becoming too solid, they need to become more fluid. And the way you can do this is by introducing more unsaturated fatty acid containing phospholipids that will spread the membranes out more and make them a little bit more fluid. At the other extreme, when the temperatures are too high and the membranes become too fluid, you need to make them more solid. And the way the cell can do this is it can move phospholipids containing saturated fatty acids, which pack in more tightly and help make the membrane more rigid or less fluid. So again, at colder temperatures, you can add unsaturated fatty acids to the membrane to make them more fluid. And at high temperatures, you can add more saturated fatty acids to make the membranes more rigid. So now moving beyond the fatty acids of the phospholipids, let's discuss the proteins that are also found in cellular membranes. Integral proteins are proteins with hydrophobic regions that extend into the plasma membrane. Remember, hydrophobic regions want to be near other nonpolar hydrophobic regions, and so the parts of the protein that are hydrophobic will insert into the plasma membrane with the phospholipid tails that are also hydrophobic. Transmembrane proteins are types of integral proteins that span the entire plasma membrane. That is, they have regions that face outside the cell and inside the cell in the same protein. Another type of protein you might find on or near the plasma membrane is called a peripheral protein. They're only loosely bound to the surface of the membrane or loosely bound to part of an integral protein. They're not directly embedded into the membrane. These proteins that are in the membrane are involved in lots of different processes that we'll look at more as we go on. They're involved in transport of molecules either out of or into the cell. They can actually act as enzymes, some of them, to catalyze chemical reactions. They can be involved in signal transduction, where signals from outside the cell are transferred inside the cell and initiate a response internally. They can be involved in cell-to-cell recognition, where two cells can see proteins on the surfaces of one another to recognize them. They can help cells join together. We talked about some of the connections between cells that hold them together. Those are involved and use proteins. And they can also help cells attach to either the cytoskeleton or the extracellular matrix. One other role for cell surface proteins is not these normal, say, healthy cellular processes, but also, unfortunately, some non-healthy ones, such as viral infection. The way that some viruses like HIV enter cells is that they bind receptors on the surfaces of particular cells that allows them to enter. When the surfaces of the cells do have this specific protein, they are allowed to bind and enter. And if they don't have the protein, then HIV can't infect the cells. So this is one example of a non-cellular reason why cell surface proteins are so important. Other things you might find on the surfaces of cells are not just proteins, but modified proteins and even other types of molecules. One of those other types of molecules is called a glycolipid. This is a lipid that has bound to it covalently one or more carbohydrates. And another type is a glycoprotein, where you can have carbohydrates stuck to the proteins that are in the membrane. One of the more popular examples of why these glycoproteins are so important is how you have a particular blood type. Blood types, that be A, B, A, B, or O, is referring to glycoproteins found on the surfaces of red blood cells. So these are sugar carbohydrate groups added to proteins on red blood cell membranes, and the different combinations of sugars are described as different antigens. So one configuration of sugar is called A, one configuration is called B, and another configuration is O. And really, O is the same configuration as A and B, just missing some extra stuff. So we almost think of it as no additional sugars. But anyway, the combinations of those sugars on the surfaces of your red blood cells is what gives you a particular type. If you have neither the A or the B, you just have the O, and so you have an O blood type. If you just have A, you're an A blood type. If you just have the B sugar, you're a B blood type. And if you have A and B, you're an AB blood type. And this is important because you can only receive blood transfusions from people with a compatible blood type. And again, just to get into a little bit of immunology to show why this is happening, consider that your body makes antibodies against foreign antigens. Foreign antigens could also include blood types that aren't yours. So for example, if you are an A blood type, that means that foreign antigens would be the B sugar blood type. So your body does not make antibodies against A, but it could make antibodies against B, meaning that if you received a blood transfusion from someone with a B blood type, your body could see it as foreign and respond poorly to it. That's why you can only receive a donation from either an A or an O. You could receive it from an O because, as I mentioned, O is kind of the base sugar without the extra sugars for A and B. So you can always receive a donation from someone with an O blood type because they have neither the A or the B, so your body wouldn't react poorly to it. If you have the B blood type, that means your body would see B as part of your host, but it would find A foreign, so you couldn't receive a blood transfusion from A. If you had an AB blood type, that means both A and B are part of the host, you would see neither of them as foreign, so you could get a blood transfusion from someone with A or with B. So that's part of the reason why certain blood types are compatible to be received based on what your host blood type is. In this discussion of proteins that are found in the surfaces of membranes, we should consider the sidedness of membranes. That is, that membranes have an external surface that faces outside the cell and an internal surface that faces inside the cell. How the proteins are synthesized inside the cell and where they're oriented in the membranes is going to determine whether or not they're facing outside or inside the cell. If a protein faces inside the endoplasmic reticulum or the ER while it's being synthesized, it'll be facing inside the Golgi, and then when that vesicle leaves the Golgi and fuses with the plasma membrane, what was inside the Golgi now faces outside the cell. So another way of saying this is that the inside of the ER and the Golgi is continuous with the outside of the cell. Conversely, if a protein faces out of the ER and then moves and is facing out of the Golgi, when a vesicle from the Golgi fuses with the plasma membrane, that protein now faces the inside of the cell. That's part of what we're describing when we talk about the sidedness of membranes, is that where the proteins begin their synthesis in the ER will determine whether or not they face outside or inside the cell. The final thing we'll discuss here about membranes is their ability or their property of being selectively permeable. That is, they're only permeable to, or they only allow the movement of, certain types of substances on their own. And this has to do with the chemical structure of the plasma membrane. Remember, plasma membranes have polar outer surfaces that face the water outside or inside of the cell, and nonpolar tails on the inside. So this means that only certain substances can freely pass through that nonpolar region inside the cell. Normally, this is only small, nonpolar, non-charged molecules. So this would be things like oxygen or carbon dioxide. And at some level, smaller polar molecules like water can diffuse through, but do so slowly. And we'll discuss in a moment how they can diffuse a lot more quickly. But again, because of the hydrophobic nature of the inside of the plasma membrane, only small, nonpolar, uncharged molecules are usually able to freely diffuse across it. But in normal biology, lots of stuff needs to get across the plasma membrane. Sugars, amino acids, gases like oxygen and carbon dioxide, and lots of ions need to move, and so there are going to be proteins that help us do this. Transport proteins are these proteins that are transmembrane proteins. They touch both the outside and the inside of the plasma membrane. And these proteins allow certain substances or classes of closely related substances to cross the membrane. One of the ones that's found in the plasma membrane is called an aquaporin, and this transmembrane protein helps water molecules diffuse across the plasma membrane. They can diffuse through the membrane on their own, but they do so quite slowly. However, with these proteins, you can move up to 3 billion water molecules per second across the plasma membrane, just from this one protein here. Other types of transporters would be things like a glucose transporter that can transfer glucose across the plasma membrane, but it is so selective that it can't bring fructose across the membrane, which is a very closely related sugar, but this transmembrane protein is so selective it only moves glucose. And in future episodes, we'll get into more details of some of these proteins and how they transport molecules across them. So just to summarize what we've talked about today, cell membranes are fluid with the movement of lipid and proteins through them. Membrane fluidity changes with temperature, and cholesterol can act as a fluidity buffer where it can take a solid membrane and make it more fluid, or a fluid membrane and make it more solid. And also, membrane composition can be changed to accommodate changes in temperature. At colder temperatures, plasma membranes can actually add unsaturated fatty acids to them to make them more fluid, and at high temperatures, you can incorporate more saturated fatty acids to make them more rigid. Membrane proteins can insert into the plasma membrane, that would be an integral membrane protein, or they can span the whole membrane and be a transmembrane protein. Proteins that don't actually insert into the membrane but are found near it are called peripheral proteins. Membrane proteins can have many functions like transport, catalyzing chemical reactions as enzymes, signal transduction, cell-to-cell recognition, cell-to-cell joining, and even attachment to the extracellular matrix or cytoskeleton. Carbohydrates can be added to lipids or proteins that are found in the membrane to make glycolipids and glycoproteins, respectively. And there are some molecules that can freely diffuse across the plasma membrane because it is selectively permeable. Those would be small, nonpolar, uncharged molecules, usually things like oxygen and carbon dioxide. And water at some rate can diffuse on its own, but with the help of a protein called an aquaporin, you can move large numbers of water molecules across the plasma membrane.